coming up on the start of the fantasy trading season. For some of you, it started in the preseason. For many of you, it will carry over into the regular season. And for some of you, it won't happen at all because some of you might be in leagues where people just don't want to trade. In my premier fantasy football league with over 150 managers, all members of the Fantasy Football for Winners community, I've set it up where every trade that is ratified by two managers has to be approved by the trade commissioners. There is a trade commissioner appointed from each division. There's just a manager who happens to also be a trade commissioner, and they get to vote on each trade. I send out a text message to all 10 of them, and basically it's, hey, up or down. And the rule is, as I've set it up, is if it's egregiously unfair, then reject it. But if it's not egregiously unfair, if it's clear that one manager is not really trying to pull a fast one on the other manager, if it's clear that both sides have a legitimate claim to winning that trade, even if one side has only a 45% chance, then it's not egregiously unfair. There's going to be an advantage often for one manager. Maybe the more desperate manager, who's 1-6, is taking a huge risk, but the payoff will be much bigger as a result. And that's okay a lot of the time. So I want to talk today about three core philosophies I have when considering making a trade, or at least making an offer to an opponent. The first is understand the market value. Fantasy Pros is a good example. They have their collection of about 200 or so or more experts, who a lot of them do weekly rankings. You can go on their site and see week to week what is each player ranked. And there might be some shifts from week to week based on injuries, based on an opponent, soft opponent, you know, more difficult defense, whatever it is. Injured quarterback would set back, you know, probably every wide receiver, that kind of thing. You get the deal. So you want to understand what the market value is for a player, because if you are making an offer to someone's handcuff, let's say in week one, and that handcuff really probably won't get more than a few touches of the game, if anything, then they might be the 60th ranked running back for week one. But if the starter in week two is questionable going into that week, then the handcuff might be valued at maybe an RB40. And you have to understand that when you're making an offer, because your opponent might be looking at that. Your opponent might be sizing up, well, what do I think I could get for this player? And is this person offering enough? So understanding the market is a key component of before you make any trade. The second thing, and this is more difficult, I've put in the time to create spreadsheets to generate probabilities, historical probabilities, to help me understand where I can take risks, where I should seize on opportunities. And I share some of that stuff with readers and most recently with podcast listeners. There is an example from 4 years ago where I started 1-3, and I was playing an opponent in week five who I was expected to lose to, and I felt I needed to make a big move. And I went to my spreadsheets to try to understand where is the highest probability a gain that I can make, big gain that I can make, even if there's a big risk involved. I'm looking to take that risk to get a big gain. And what I found was for the previous several decades, that wide receivers were in general more likely to get 30 plus points in a week than running backs. It's a pretty simple concept, but I had all of the data to back it up because I had that spreadsheet. I pulled it together years earlier and kept updating it every year. Understood what it meant, but hadn't really gone through it in the detail that I did when I was 1-3, when I really started to work through the numbers and understand the clear advantage that wide receivers had for 30-plus point performances. And the same was true for 40-plus point performances. I needed to go for broke at 1-3. That was my feeling, because if I fell to 1-4, I would be in an almost must-win situation for the next 9 weeks, essentially. And I didn't want to be in that, or 8 weeks. I didn't want to be in that situation. So I traded for CeeDee Lamb, and this was back in 2021. So it was before the CeeDee Lamb we know and love today. And I traded for Antonio Brown, who at that point was kind of on the verge of post-prime. I gave away a lot, but the key was I gave away a lot at running back, because I felt that was the best play that I could do, that my running backs were less likely to get 30-plus points than my wide receivers. If you go back and check, you can see that CeeDee Lamb had a huge performance. I think it was, I might have traded for CeeDee Lamb the week before. And then Antonio Brown when I was 1-3. And, it worked out. I got several 30-plus point performances. I ended up winning the title that year. That would not have happened if I had not done the research, if I had not analyzed the data, and then if I had not applied what I'd learned by reaching out to opponents, targeting which wide receivers I thought I could acquire based on the market value of my players and their players, plus which wide receivers had the best chance to get those just the chunk points that I needed. It worked out. It is not always going to work out like that, but it was proof of concept for me that I could use data to my advantage. My opponents did not have those spreadsheets. I knew something they didn't, and I capitalized on it. The third part of the trading philosophy is I view trading as a long-term proposition with opponents. I am not trying to just score and move on, because if I take advantage of an opponent, and it is clear that I'm trying to take advantage of an opponent, then I am damaging my ability to negotiate with that opponent in the future. With trades, because they're going to see me as someone who is not treating them respectfully, which is fair. And if a trade even goes through, even if it's not approved, everyone else in the league can see that I'm treating someone unfairly, and that might make it difficult for me to make trades with them. If I had the reputation in my league, in the Premier Fantasy Football League I'm in, 4 years ago, I don't think I could have gotten CeeDee Lamb and Antonio Brown, even giving up the great running back talent that I did, I think people would have been suspicious. You don't want opponents to be suspicious. You want opponents to understand that you're going for an advantage, because we all are, but there's still a strong possibility that your opponent could get the better end of the deal. Last year, I think I mentioned this before, that I traded Cortland Sutton for McLaurin, got the advantage basically for the rest of the season, because Terry McLaurin had a better season than Cortland Sutton. It was like week two that I made the trade, but my opponent and I acknowledged that, there was no clear winner. I felt I had a slight advantage. That's what I'm talking about. You want to go into these things thinking, I want to make a lot of trades with this opponent, or at least negotiate a lot of trades, even if they all don't go through, for years to come. And so get in the mindset of your opponent. And the easiest way to do that is you reverse the trade. So if you're in the case of trading Cortland Sutton for Terry McLaurin, I needed to go into it thinking, if he had Sutton and I had McLaurin and he made the offer, would I take Sutton in exchange for McLaurin? And my answer at the time was, I might do it. And that was enough, because the might was key. If my initial reaction is no freaking way, then there's your answer. You should not make an offer to someone where you would have a no freaking way response if they made the exact same offer back to you. I'm BJ Riddell, Fantasy Football for Winners. Follow me on the blog. Reach out anytime. We'll see you tomorrow.